Good evening. Welcome to Families in Recovery. My name is Bill, and you're going to listen to a recording with my lovely wife, Kathy, and our cousin, Frank, talking about the topic, denial.
Yep.
Hey, Frank, today's show is about denial.
Denial.
And denial. I know you like denial because you're the one who says, I'd like to talk about denial. You know, I thought about the classroom because you're saying they all came back in there which I think is a good segue to denial. They all came into class and they started with a predisposition of being able to look at everybody else and their whatever attributes and characteristics. And then as the weeks went on, they were able to identify themselves with something they might have been, you know, pointing at the other person in class.
Yeah, Absolutely. No, I mean, let me just say this. Denial is easy to spot.
Okay.
When you're not in it.
Right. Yeah, when you're looking at somebody else.
When you're looking at somebody else, you can see the denial. But what is it?
Yeah, that's what we want to start talking
denial?
About.
Right.
All right. I think once you understand the nature of this phenomenon, okay, it's a psychological mechanism, that's a defense mechanism. Blah, 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 all of that psychobabble doesn't help the person.
Okay.
Here's what denial really is. And I'm going to ask you to pardon my French, but denial is your ability to successfully bullshit yourself.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Now, think about that for 1 second. In order to successfully deceive yourself, the very first thing that has to be true is that you can't know you're doing it. You are unable to know you're doing it. Isn't that true?
Wow.
I mean, once the mark knows he's a mark, the con is blown.
Right.
All right. So, you have this ability. Humans have the ability to deceive themselves successfully.
Wow. Okay?
People who have an addiction tend to utilize that ability beyond the healthy parameters of it, because there's some healthy denial. There is healthy denial.
Right.
All right. And that healthy denial is to create a buffer between you and traumatic events so you're not paralyzed. Okay. So there's denial that helps you with those things.
Frank, I'm almost thinking denial helps you with that. I'm almost thinking it's the struggle that somebody has to accept, acknowledge, embrace, understand the truth. So I put up this barrier of a delusional, deceptive barrier because I'm struggling to accept that truth.
Correct.
Yeah, matter of fact.
The truth, when you say I'm struggling to accept it, you have to, how can I say this most descriptively? You have to understand that the truth we want you to accept is that your father can die at any second.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
You say okay, you nod your head, but you're not there, because when he does, you're going to have a different feeling.
You're still you're upset, you don't think it should have happened.
Well, that's the first stage of grief is denial, because you need the buffer.
Yes.
You need the buffer, then anger, then bargaining, then depression, then acceptance. It's an unacceptable, it's an uncomfortable, terrible piece of life that we have to cope with, and denial does help us cope. But when it's activated by a malfunctioning brain chemistry, all right, and you begin to use it more and more for less and less things. That why doesn't he see that he drinks too much? You know,
right?
Well, he doesn't see that,
or
see that
the
because that means he has to give up his best friend.
Yes, or
his
the
best friend's gonna die.
Or the what'd you call it? A relationship addict that's in denial of their over functioning.
And enabling
in that addict's life. They're you can't say anything to get them to see that.
Okay. The relationship addict.
Yeah.
Okay. If a drug addict's drug of choice
is
the drug.
Yeah.
Heroin, say.
Right.
The relationship addict's drug of choice is control.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The relationship addict needs to control everything.
Mm-hmm.
Primarily coming from a shame-bound system where somehow, some way, being raised, she jumped to the conclusion that she is
flawed.
Something bad.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Something bad. Anybody liking her is getting gypped.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That's why they don't really love. Mm-hmm. They manipulate.
Mm-hmm. They do.
They role play it, but they don't aren't it. Because they believe themselves to be flawed goods.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they're shame bound. That's where addiction, if addiction was a plant that grows, shame is the soil and fertilizer for that plant.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's not to say guilt. Guilt
right.
is I've done something bad, shame is I am something bad.
That's
yes.
correct.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
So that piece is what the denial is protecting them from.
What piece? The piece, what?
To
the shame.
Take a good look at how crummy and rotten and terrible you are.
Oh.
And why that is.
So
how you came to that conclusion.
So then we project
what's
it.
Going on with how come you're ugly, you're fat, you're lazy, you're stupid. Okay. All of that stuff that's being squelched down there. Okay. Not even. It's not conscious at all.
Right.
So is that why we end up yelling at the addict and being horrible to them and our behavior starts being ridiculous? Because we're projecting it?
A, projecting to a certain degree. But B, you're failing.
Oh,
you're failing as an individual. So the shame part is
you're failing to control him.
Oh.
Yeah, and that's a reflection of you. That's a reflection of you, your character, who you are as an individual.
Yeah, yeah.
So Frank,
you've got to find a denial pattern to make it his fault.
So Frank, so denial has a role. Like you said, it is a part of a process that exists. So denial does a buffer. It does a buffer. Your loved one passes away, and it's a buffer. So you're not immediately in shock or whatever. And then it sounded like from your conversation is that. All right, so there's a process with that denial. Then you move to the next stage. But if we become unhealthy with it, somehow we were overusing it, or because of our shame, it becomes exaggerated. That's what I'm hearing you say?
Yeah, it becomes overused.
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 So,
overused, I mean, addicts use denial for the silliest stuff.
So
no, I wasn't in that there. I didn't have a drink.
A couple things come in my mind. Of course, then the big thing is what is our relationship to the people in denial, and what should we be doing differently than we currently do, or if there's anything we can do, what's the person could do who may think they're in denial? How do you find out that you're in denial? Because if I'm in denial, I don't know my condition.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay. One of the brilliant Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob inventions was the steps.
Yes.
Okay. You can successfully bullshit yourself.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. So what that means is step two.
Mm-hmm.
You need something outside and greater than yourself to pull you back.
Right.
To pull you in. Okay. And then in step three, you have to turn it over.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The reason those work is because those three steps are the battle of denial.
Yeah.
That is the whole personification of what you would do when someone is in denial. You don't, first, you got to understand your own denial of your needing to fix them. Or there's something you should be able to do to help them out.
That's correct. Yep.
Because that's the Christian thing to do.
Sure.
Right. Right.
No. No.
No.
Okay. The Christian thing to do is okay, but do not imitate Jesus' ending.
Dying?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. the whole thing that happens with addiction is this manipulation and this interaction, as opposed to love, which
yes.
does not require you sacrifice any of your space self.
Mm-hmm.
Your self has to be intact. It's you, and you need to love it.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting, Frank. Mm-hmm. I just had this experience, and see if it fits what you're saying. Is about 15 months ago, I came into a relationship with a fellow that I was asked to kind of see if I could help him, minister, connect up with him, support him, encourage him. He ended up, his wife had dropped dead on him like 14 years ago, but he hasn't been able to move past it, became a hoarder.
He's stuck in grief.
Right, he's stuck in grief, a hoarder and so on. And so for the last 15 months, I, you know, worked with him and stuff and helped him in some areas of his life. But you know what? After 15 months, I said, you know what? I got to step back. I got to step back because I was sacrificing myself. I was coming because he wasn't moving in certain areas. And it was beginning to frustrate me. As a matter of fact, I eventually said to him, I said, you know what? I'm in over my head. I'm in over my head and I need a break. And because, again, I, like you said, I became unhealthy where I was now thinking I was doing the Christian thing.
Because just say, Christianity has got so many wonderful denial methods. I mean, it's exactly right.
Yeah.
You believe that you're supposed to jump on the grenade.
Yeah.
You believe because of that, that somehow that Jesus wants you to ignore yourself.
Yeah. Right.
That's a paradox, because Jesus wants you to love him, and in order to love him, you got to love you first.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In order to love you first, you got to make yourself. That's one of the brilliances of 12-step programs or even any support program.
Right.
Is the idea that if you put yourself first.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You don't sacrifice yourself for anything, because then you won't be any good.
That's right.
And you know what's neat, Frank? Right in the Bible, it comes right out and says, love your neighbor as yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I think many Christians are unhealthy because they walk around with their own shame, they might even come to church because they're looking right. for an answer to their own sickness, their own shame, their own dysfunctionality. And so they go there. They may find acceptance and love, which is good. They may find God. That's good. But that sickness and unhealthiness still may be impacting the way they're interacting and relating.
Yes.
Yeah.
And one of the addictions, the process addictions, is called religion addiction.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And those are like, you know, the AA Moonies. Or the,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
yeah, yeah,
and that is actually pretty self-destructive. But what a wonderful buffer, because you can't get through that easily.
Yep. Yeah,
because you know you're going, well, you're attacking my religion,
right?
Right,
right.
Yeah,
yeah.
So let's.
So it's better. It's better. It's a guy like you, Bill, does have an unequal opportunity to. Get inside.
Yeah.
You know, I remember when I first started working in the field, we had a chronic schizophrenic woman who thought she was Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You
mm-hmm.
know, she thought she was Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And what I saw this therapist do was just, he went in and he goes, I'm Jesus Christ.
Mm.
And it freaked her out. And she stopped.
Really?
She yeah. stopped thinking she was okay. Jesus Christ?
Yeah. She got, I mean, okay, so what you can do is you can use the Bible's words against that crap.
Yeah.
Against the crappy part of what they're doing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you got to get in first.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you earn the trust of because you really do care. I mean, you know, I know my ministry and I do care. So you do make yourself vulnerable, which allows them to become vulnerable, and then you can come in there and look at things in that they may be afraid to look at because you're looking at it with them.
Well, you know what the thing that you do that is the most powerful is you model.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
If you're modeling self-care, mm-hmm. then the patient learns that maybe he should come first.
Now, so, Frank, okay.
Let me ask a question. So this person that Bill was talking about, you know, Bill wanted to help him get out of his denial about he was the victim and everything around him, you know, everything around him was the problem, not him. So Bill was trying to help him get out of his denial, but I think the problem was is he didn't want to get out of the denial.
No, the problem was he couldn't want to.
Okay.
He couldn't want to.
And why? Because of the shame and all
because
that stuff?
Because of the
stuff?
Shame and...
Because of his denial. He doesn't know. I mean...
Wait, and Frank,
he perceives you as crazy.
Okay,
Frank,
but he's crazy.
But you know what, Frank? Here's what was interesting. A couple times over the 15 months, I used his own logic to reason himself to a corner to expose the logic. For instance, he's blaming his wife for his cluttered house, and it's her fault and everything. And I said, wow, that's very interesting. I said because. From looking at your situation, the garbage that's in the dining room is 90% yours. The garbage in the living room is 90% yours. The garbage in the kitchen is 90% yours. Yeah, your wife may own the the bedroom. I said, so you're blaming her for all your stuff. Well, if that's true, then let me ask you this. Can I stop helping you and I will help your wife clean up all that garbage? See what I did? I turned around. So if you're saying it, yeah, if you're saying it's your wife's fault, then I guess what? I'll go work with her, and I'll have that house cleaned out in about a week. And boy, did
because
he
shut.
Because
she would want to.
Yeah, because she would want to. He immediately became defensive and said, "I'm attacking him."
Okay, you know, in the grief stages,
right?
If you're successful at breaking through denial, you know what you're going to come up against.
What?
Teach
the
me.
Second stage.
What? Oh, anger?
Anger.
Oh, that's what you were.
Yeah. He shuts me right down and says, I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it. You know,
you can't help a person out of denial.
So let's go back to, yes, she's saying, so how do we help? Again, talk a little more then about denial. Because you have the families out there listening to this with their addicts are in denial, but then you have the family members who are in denial. So talk a little bit more about, well, what are we looking, like you said, so I guess the breakthrough comes from steps 1, 2, and 3.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so our role then as a support or our role as a resource of ourselves is that what? We wait, we love. You said love.
You love them, you wait. You do not attempt to control or manipulate what they think or do.
No.
And,
wow.
And I know this is a non-mother
statement, instinct. Yeah.
But you let them die.
Yep.
Wow. Yeah. And that's their whole issue. They don't want them to die.
Correct.
Yeah.
And then that's why it's so important.
You have to let that go and model self-care.
Yes.
Model self-care.
Mm-hmm.
So you're.
And they'll either catch on or they're, you know, God has used them to be a role model to deter other people. Everyone has a role and a meaning in life. And for the addict that kills themselves with their addiction, there are lessons there that other recovering addicts grab onto and are helped by.
I see.
So you're not big enough to see God's picture because God knows. You know,
right.
Right.
You can't
right.
try to figure out what a human does.
Yeah. Right.
So, and that is one of the motivators of a denial pattern for the loved ones is that I can't, it's up to, if, and this is about codependency, if he does die, my shame will deepen by clothes.
Oh, I know.
Because I have failed in a big way.
Wow.
That's
how it works. And so this is interesting for our listeners to understand then that their own shame, their own things that has happened to them in life that has helped foster and create this relationship addiction that they have is the foundation, the soil is shame, which you had mentioned earlier, and everything grows from that. So we would encourage our listeners then to work their own program. Go back and look at steps 1, 2, 3 about, because you said control was a big thing. So they have to come to a place of letting go of control, to believe there's a power greater than themselves that knows the answers. They don't have to know the answers. The power outside of themselves know the answers, whether or not your child will live or not.
The power outside of themselves loves them.
Yes.
To help them.
Yeah.
And even though down deep they don't feel they're worthy of it.
Yes. Yes.
Right? They have to fake it, pretend they are.
Yes.
And then after a couple of years, they'll be that way.
Well, I see it in the Nar-Anon program. I see the family members come in and they want to fix their addicts, and they come in and we don't teach them how to fix their addict, and we teach them that they have to start looking at themselves. And I mean, I've been in the program, you know, the meetings for like 4 years, and it's phenomenal to watch them change.
Well, the ones who work it.
The ones who work it. It's phenomenal to watch them change.
We watch some of these families that had that struggle of, we just had a family who had a son went away, and he ended up working, started work somewheres, but they had a drive within them to bring him home, you know, and all we could do is say, well, we support you. You know,
I told them I thought it wasn't a good idea.
No, you don't support self-destructive behavior.
No, well, right. I challenged them. This is what I said. So why does he want to come home? Well, he needs the family. I said, what's he need the family for? You said he's got a job out there. Well, he wants to be closer to us. I said, what do you mean be closer to you? Because I have sisters who live in Nevada. If I want to be closer, I just call them on the phone, say, I love you and how you doing? So why does he have to come here for to be closer and to know you love him and care for him? So I challenged that reality of I need him to come home, or he needs to come home. Oh, why does he need to come home? I said.
Yes, that was I would have done the same thing.
So do addicts need to be home and with their families to heal?
No, the truth is he needs him.
He needs him.
He needs him. Say that again. What's that mean?
That's so good. Yeah, explain that.
Okay. He's going through control withdrawal.
Uh-huh.
He's starting to confront himself, which he doesn't want to do. He needs the kid to be diverted.
Oh, you're saying that the parent...
If his life is a pie,
okay,
what percentage of that pie is him dealing with the insanity and the addiction of the kid?
Right.
What percentage?
Right.
I bet you it's about 100.
Right.
Right.
Now, the kid's off and they're doing well and there's no reason for dad.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is a gigantic black hole.
Yes.
All right? And some people might go to religion to fix it,
mm-hmm.
but when they fix it with 100%, that's not a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's sort of destructive. You have physical, psychological, social, emotional, and spiritual slices in your pie.
Yes.
Okay? And you better be taking care of them equally.
Got you. Mm-hmm.
So that family, that father, instead of getting the son to come back to fill that void, he could have been looking at social, spiritual, emotional components, resources out there.
So what about the addict who came home? You know, did he need his family to get better? I mean,
no, opposite.
What did the addict need to get better?
Got worse with his family.
Okay, and what does the addict need to get better?
He needs a spiritual awakening.
Okay.
That's what.
Okay.
Phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Steps 1, 2, 3. He needs his own spiritual awakening of a higher power to deliver him.
Frank, Kathy, let's go into our spiritual conversation for tonight. In the Bible, many examples of being in denial. One that I think about is King David. King David thought himself untouchable. And there was a time when he, living in his king's mansion, looked over a wall to the house adjacent to his and sees a beautiful young lady washing herself. And of course, after he was watching this young lady for a while, he desired her. And actually, he ended up inviting her over to his house, sleep with this woman. He didn't leave it there. She became pregnant. And so King David summoned her husband back from battle and encouraged him to sleep with her, but he would not because his men were still in battle. So David then wrote a letter to the captain of the army and told him to put this man, Uriah was his name, her husband, at the front of the line, and he was murdered. David thought he got away from it all, but God didn't let him stay in his denial. The Lord sent a prophet to him. And it's interesting how God broke through his denial. This is what happened. The prophet came to him and said, "O king, I have a story for you. There was a rich man who had many flocks and herds, and there was a poor man that had nothing except for one little lamb. And one day, a travel person traveling through came to this rich man, and the rich man wanted to prepare him lamb. And what he did was went and took the lamb from the poor man." And David, hearing this story, was very angry. And he said to Nathan, "As the Lord lives, the man that has done this thing shall surely die." And of course, Nathan turns to him and says, "Thou art the man. You have taken the one thing from your neighbor. You had all the riches as king, and you took this one man's ewe," or in this case, his wife. And David was grieved with it. That broke through the denial. David seen his sin, and he really, it bothered him. And this is what he said in Psalms 13:3: "Consider and hear me, O Lord my God, enlighten my eyes, lest I sleep the sleep of death." And so David recognized that only God could open his eyes and make him aware of his denial and delusion. And in Psalms 51:10, David turns around and he says, "Create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew in me a steadfast spirit. Do not cast me away." So again, David recognized, but God was able to break through his denial through a story. And there's more, because then we have the story of Peter. Peter was one of Jesus's disciples, very close to Jesus. Jesus was talking to disciples and says, "There's going to come a time when all of you will run away. You'll stumble because of me, and you'll all run away." But Peter, having heard him say this, said, even if all of the others are going to run away from you, yet I will not." And Jesus said to him, "I'm telling you, Peter, today you will run away, and you will even deny me three times before the rooster crows." And Peter spoke even more upset and said, "If I have to die with you, I will not deny you." And even the rest of the disciples agree with Peter, said, yeah, we will, same with us also. But we know the story, don't we? Because Peter ends up denying Jesus. We know the story. After Jesus was taken, Peter was around a fire. Somebody came, "Oh, I know you. Aren't you one of Jesus' disciples?" And he said, "No." And then the cock crows. And then another person comes up and says to him, he says, "No," again. And the cock crows. And then he denies him again a little later, three times. And, he curses and says, "No, I don't know this man." And as he's saying it, Peter recalls to mind the words that Jesus said to him, "Before the cock crows twice, you will deny me three times." And here, Peter's heart was broken because he recognized that he was in a state of denial. He recognized that he had was in a state that didn't recognize his true condition. And that's like we are, and like our addicts, in a denial, that we can't see our true condition in relationship to the addict, and the addict cannot see their true condition. So you'll hear, as we're talking here in the rest of the show, you'll hear Frank and Kathy and I talking about, really, it comes down to the only thing that's going to break denial, you're going to hear us talking about it, is first of all, you have to come to a place, look at the first three steps, right, of AA or any 12-step program. We admitted we are powerless. We're powerless over what? Alcohol, the addict, our own lives, and they become unmanageable. Number two, come to believe a power outside ourselves could restore us to sanity. And so, God breaks through our denial. God gives us a moment of enlightenment, as David says, "Enlighten my mind, O Lord, so that I can see." And so God breaks through our denial and our delusion. And so that's what we need, is realizing that in our addict's life, in our lives, it's God breaking through. God's got to break through to denial. You and I are not going to be able to do that. Now, there's some techniques and stuff that Frank will bring out here in our conversation that may help in our addict or our own lives breaking through denial. So pay attention as we go forward. But denial is prevalent throughout the Bible, people not recognizing their true condition and how God was working, just like we're trying to work in our addicts' lives, how God is working in our lives and other people's lives to break through that denial and have a moment of enlightenment, self-awareness, so that that revelation could come through and that then we could see our true condition and then go ahead and turn it over to God and move in a new direction. All right, Frank, Kathy, back to you.
Okay, and what does the addict need to get better?
He needs a spiritual awakening.
Okay.
I don't care if it's a tree.
Yeah.
Right.
Grasshopper. Whatever the higher power is.
Yeah.
It is. And now, if he uses it, he can successfully.
Well,
I know you care, but.
Well, I'm going to tell you right. Why. Because we just worked with a young couple. And they worked the 12 steps for many years and ran 12 steps, ran recovery houses, had their spiritual growth, came so far. But when we finally sat down and they did some counseling on the spiritual side with us and mentoring and coaching, they said, wow, now our lives are like fuller and we feel even more equipped to have success over the addiction than when we took the spirituality and made it about anything, because the chair doesn't have power to deliver me. So even though the theory of AA starts with pick anything, what they finally realized, oh no, wait, when you introduced us to God as a reality, that was more meaningful to us and more substantial in us maintaining our sobriety than believing something that subconsciously we understood didn't have the power.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But when did you do that?
After years, I guess, or when they came to us. But
bingo.
That's right? It.
You've got to realize that when they came that's into it. Sobriety.
That's it.
Full denial, all right?
Mm-hmm. Recognize
their denial
the need.
Would have twisted God into an enemy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If they even believed in it. You know, they would have made you crazy for believing in God.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
They'd watch a lot of Bill Maher comedy shows about
right.
religiosity.
Yeah, yeah.
See that?
Yeah.
Did you see the Bill Maher movie?
No.
Religiosity.
Yeah.
Mm. The one thing, you know, Maher doesn't believe in religion at all because
right.
he sort of has some points about being.
I understand.
Somewhat responsible for war. But.
Yep.
You know, and he was trying to mock the three person, the Trinity mystery.
Yeah.
He was saying, you know, why is God going to be so schizophrenic? Why does he have to have three people? Why doesn't he just be God? What is this son thing? What is this?
Right.
You know, why does he demand blood and death? What the fuck is he saying about, you know, especially if he's a God of love.
Right.
And why would he be the Holy Ghost, the Father, and the Son?
Right.
That's weird. And the guy answers him very placidly. He said, well, water is ice, it's a liquid, mm-hmm. and it's steam.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So
that's cool.
Why does God have to be stuck in ice or stuck in steam?
Yeah.
Or stuck in water?
That's
love
cool.
it. Love it.
And Maher was floored. He got him. And he left it in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that was good of him. That was big of him.
That was good.
Kathy's got another question.
So, Frank, are there different denial patterns that you can, like, list the name of or, like, different denial patterns?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
So tell me what some of those are and how you explain them.
Okay, yeah. So,
yeah, so, like, what are the ones in there that you can relate to? Or
the
you?
Patterns. Avoidance.
Yeah. Yeah. So go ahead and talk about those.
Yeah, there's avoidance. And then there's distraction.
Okay.
And now, one thing to understand about denial being an avoidance pattern of denial is that whatever it is that they're, you know, being distracted by is actually true.
Okay.
Okay? I mean...
Explain that.
Know, boy, my wife, she is such a bitch. You would drink if you were married to her, too.
Oh. Okay.
Get the wife in and, damn, he's right. Okay? But what he's doing is he's using his wife to avoid his own sins, to his own
So shame, that's the avoidance, okay.
Issues, okay? Mm-hmm.
And
he will have, whatever he uses to avoid, he will have a real interest in discussing it because it isn't the real thing for him.
Yeah.
You know, but it is a real thing. I lost my job. My God, I got to go find a new job. This is terrible. Blah, 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 blah. My boss was such a jerk.
Right. Okay.
And he will invest in counseling for job and resume writing classes, and he'll go all over the map looking like he is the most earnest and wonderful job hunter there is.
Okay.
Right.
He isn't touching why he lost his job.
And he's still in denial about it because he's still blaming?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, he doesn't want to, he's avoiding that. I mean, one of the things alcoholics tend to do is they tend to keep their jobs.
Okay, yes. You know,
because that would mean supply goes away if they didn't have them.
Yes.
Addicts don't like to be separated from their supply.
Right.
They have to have a steady income.
Right.
To go drinking.
Yeah, because they become functional alcoholics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, that's avoidance.
Yeah.
All right? The other one, absolute denial, is the ghost limb.
Okay, explain that. Uh-huh.
You know what the ghost limb
is? You feel your foot even though it's not there.
It's not there, right.
Yeah.
It's sort of an absolute denial. And okay. It's like there was a book... about this woman, Mish Havisham, whose fiance left her standing at the church, and she was continually serving him.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, yeah, I know this to be true of people in grief with a recent death who still talk to or believe that they're talking to
the
person that's dead.
Okay? Right.
That's sort of absolute denial.
I got
they're
you.
Not there. They kind of know they're not there.
Yeah.
Yep.
But absolute denial is giving them the buffer. It's not always unhealthy.
Yes. Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Especially if it's a process.
Yeah. I just want to read down through a few of them just for the listeners to listen. We don't have to explain everyone. Denial, minimization denial, denial of rationalization, denial of blaming, comparing, compliance, manipulating. Flight to, into health, recovery by fear, hopelessness. You know, so these are just some of the different
denials. Talk about some of your big
any of those jump any of those jump out to you that you could think of that you say
all of them.
All of them.
I mean, I've had so many varieties of all of them.
So again,
giving you examples of each one.
Well, and I don't need to do that. What I'm more interested in is how you relate to them or as a therapist, and in our case, as mentors or coaches or parents of the addicts, when you think of all of these different mechanisms of denial that we use, I don't know if there's anything you would say, well, look, if I'm sitting with somebody who's practicing these type of different denials, hopelessness, I could sit there and say, well, it isn't that hopeless, but that ain't going to change them.
Exactly.
No.
Be there with them.
Just be there with them.
Be there with them. In other words, say, oh, my God, you must, why do you even go? Actually, I do it. You exaggerate it.
Oh.
Exaggerate the denial.
Oh.
It is hopeless. I don't even, you know, God bless you for staying alive.
Okay? Interesting.
I don't even know why you don't commit suicide. It's so bad.
Yeah.
You know, God, it's been terrible. And they'll... A lot of times when you do that, they jerk around. They get mad at you because you're getting through denial.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
I will kill myself. It'll be your fault. No, I won't.
But see, now that goes back to, like, because earlier I had talked about, you know, supporting. You said, well, I don't want you to support that family, you know, by supporting their delusion or whatever. But then the guy that was blaming his wife for the dirty house, are you saying I could have just said to him, you know what? Yeah, you're right. She probably.
No. Just say, why the f*** you stay with her?
Okay. Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah. So why? Yeah, why are you staying with her then? Yeah.
Why don't I? Why don't we go out looking for what some apartments for rent?
Oh.
And then you'll have a clean apartment. She can keep the garbage of hers.
Oh, I see.
Okay. And then what you're trying to do is get him to see the degree to which he needs his wife.
Right. So you exaggerate.
Yeah.
So you exaggerate what they're saying and sort of agreeing with it.
So let's say we go, use another example. The guy who wants his son to come back, mm-hmm. or the mother who wants his son to come back.
Or the addict who wanted to come
home. I thought you did a good job with that.
Oh, well, thank you. No, yeah.
I thought,
yeah.
Why do you want him to come back?
Yeah. I did too. It didn't work. They brought him home. But so did you use the tech?
Feel sober?
As of Sunday, they did a drug test.
So it's been a week. He's home for a week. So
yeah.
That's nothing. Yeah, you give him a month or a month. Yeah, exactly. Right. Then again, the whole dysfunction is going to play out.
Mm-hmm.
So again, just to model for our listeners. So in that case, with the father who wanted to come home, and the one technique was to challenge a thought a little bit by saying, so why does he need to come out? Okay, we said, oh, that wasn't bad. But going back to this one, which says to take it to the extreme, then how would I do that in that case with the father wanting the son to come home? I'd be saying to him, sure, what? Go ahead, bring him home. Why? Give him your house, or I don't know.
Well, I would have done something like, it is really helpful to your son to have a job and feel like he's making it. So I have an idea. Why don't you pack up and move there?
Okay? I got you.
Pack up and move there, and then he could still have the esteem that's coming from the job. He could still have the benefit of feeling like he's on his own and everything else. But then you could be there to get him using again. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, right. No, we understand. Yeah. No, but this is good because I want our listeners to hear your brain say, oh, so this is how I would say it and word it. So, because our brains aren't used to thinking the way you've been trained to think.
Well, here's what you got to do, Bill. You really need to develop, if you're going to do this for not even a living, but for a vocation, you've got to learn to think out of the box.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay. And that sometimes might even be the Bible's box.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
All right.
Yep.
So you've got to learn to find a perspective that will challenge the guy and that isn't insane.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, moving down to where your son is pretty good at suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not that insane. And so it would be something that would at least shake up his need.
Yeah, and I think
all I can do is that much. I'm not God. God, I did the shaking. Mm-hmm. Rip them apart or let them stay. Whatever you're going to do, you're going to do.
So when they get angry at that statement, then you know you're kind of in it for a second. They might be stepping a little bit out of the denial.
They are. You've succeeded in cracking through denial to a certain degree. All right? That's sort of the success of having done that. But, I think that the most helpful thing is when they do sort of come to the conclusion themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It's don't ever, unsolicited advice is always a put down. Okay, always a put down. And so instead of giving them the answer or giving them the fish, you've got to teach them to fish. So So you make it as much of a puzzle for you as for them.
So,
and then find perspectives for yourself that you would share with them that are left field and right field.
I like that.
And he may just start. He may come up with something entirely different, but it'll be something different.
I got you.
Yeah, I like where you're coming with, because again, working with that guy, I worked with for 15 months. One thought I have as we're talking is, first of all, Bill Beans, don't wait 15 months to become totally frustrated trying the same thing, you know, the logical reasoning with them. Look for that changing it up changing it up with them and coming from a different tactic or angle. I believe in planting seeds. So, again, the work I did do, I don't discredit. I planted seeds. And like you said, a couple times I know I hit home because he became through the denial to anger. It just didn't bear any fruit yet. I like what you're saying about mix it up. And I think that challenges me because, again, I could, in that relationship, it would have been nice sooner to come into this nice little tactics that you talked about, like affirming, like say, well, then what do you want to do? I mean, you're saying it's your wife's fault. Do you want to leave the house? You want to get your own place? Mm-hmm. What do you want to do? You know, and kind of challenge them with that and let throw back. Yeah.
The whole 80% of me mm-hmm. with a client is asking them to give me the answers.
Yeah.
I know.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And here's a rule. If you're working harder than your client, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, amen.
I agree.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, and you're hurting yourself.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's why I, in this one case, I had to step back. Yeah.
Yes.
You know, Frank, you've given us so many thoughts on denial. I don't know if there's anything else you'd like to share.
Yeah, what? Is there anything else on denial that you can talk about?
You want to share?
No, I just think that...
you gave us a wealth of information.
Yeah, you did. It's awesome.
The cure for denial is not up to us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay? Mm. And our denial...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To think that we can...
Is incapable. We're not capable of breaking our denial. What we need mm-hmm. is you, and we have to say that to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
To say, I'm going to turn this over to, you know, a lot of people, addicts, let's use an alcoholic, for example. A lot of people don't understand what a higher power is.
Right.
Right.
And I tell them, especially because I can't tell you how many atheists and agnostics and mm-hmm. Abused Christians.
Correct. If you will, right.
Catholic.
Yes.
Catholics are abused Christians.
Very much so.
But, all right, you don't go there. I'm a higher power.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a higher power.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm a higher power, and me and Bill together are even a higher than that power.
Mm-hmm.
And then me and Bill and Kathy are even a higher than that power.
Mm-hmm.
So for step three, if you trust that we really care about you and that we really just want to help you,
very good.
Do what we suggest, even if it feels like perversion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it will.
Yeah.
It will.
See, that's
feel
really good.
Like perversion.
Yeah.
Things we're telling you to do. I mean, I am telling you to go to a meeting in front of a group of strangers
mm-hmm.
and tell them things you haven't even told your bartender. That's not going to feel right.
Right.
But because you trust us.
Because you trust us, you let go of control. Mm-hmm. You trust that we really love, care, support you, and have your best interest in mind. So therefore, trust us when we say, take this step. I like that. Mm-hmm. Here's another thing, Frank, phenomenal thoughts. Here's what came up as you were talking to me, the shame component.
Yes.
So again, a lot of us, the denial helps us to minimize the shame feelings we have and so on. To work with the shame, I remember when I got into healing and so on, that I would have to counter the shameful thoughts. So, for instance, my wife and I actually made a 3x5 card, and we wrote on it, we are valuable, we are precious, and we are worth loving. So every time, and we had it like taped to the front door, we had it taped in the bathroom. So, yeah, so all the time when we were feeling shame, we were feeling bad about ourselves, we would read that and say, we would counter, first of all, we would counter the negative by saying, no, I reject that thought. Mm-hmm. I am. And I would say it with an affirmative tone. No, I am valuable, precious, and worth loving. So even though that conflict, it's what you were saying earlier about faking it till you make it.
Yes.
I was at the war within me that was saying, I feel bad about who I am. And at the same time, taking the steps to say, no, I reject that thought. I am valuable, precious, and worth loving. So I think people could take that away. And
you know what else?
Yeah, what?
Go the other way with the shame. Prove it.
Oh, that's the, yeah.
Okay.
I've been doing some work with the rational.
Prove you're lousy, prove it. Show me how you are.
That's okay. Great.
Right.
And then I'll take you down there and you'll be able to see that's because when you were 2 months old and Santa said, you're worth nothing, you kid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
You took it literally or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, see, I believe that everything you have done, everything you do to become who you are is not caused by external events.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that make crappy decisions when you're 5, 4, 3, 2 years old about things, especially when you're in a youth area where you believe the world revolves around you when you're young.
Right? Yeah.
Yep.
Right. So everything you do is your fault. Everything that's going wrong is
your
fault.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Well, you know that's wrong. You know that's not true. So you challenge that.
Yeah.
Prove that you are an asshole.
That's very good.
Prove that you are a jerk.
Yeah.
Prove that you are. You know, show me. And the kinds of things you do just don't fit that.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's cool.
Yeah.
So the way the relationship addict can work with their shame, then they would need to tell themselves that it's not their fault that the addict is an addict, and it's not within their control to fix the addict. Those would be the things that they would say to help their shame.
Right. That's exactly right. And they don't need to fix the addict to be okay.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
They don't need to fix the addict to be okay. It isn't a failure. It isn't got anything to do with you. It's not even personal.
Right.
You know,
I used to tell, there was a treatment program I used to head up called Focus for Codependents.
Yep. Yep.
And one of the things I would do, I would use a disease model, and I would say, you know, I would have them understand that what the addict has is a disease, and they would buy that. So then we come into group, and one woman in the group is screaming, my husband said I was fat and ugly, and he, you know, he said sex with me is no good, and I mean, all of that, okay?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I went, now, do you believe your husband has a disease?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it is. Now, do you believe epilepsy is a disease?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Now, if your epileptic person came over to your house and you were having a conversation, and then they went into a grand mal seizure and smashed your $5,000 mint vase, smashed it to bits, what would you do? Would you go, you idiot, couldn't you twitch over there? No, you wouldn't do that. It's stupid.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
But next time your husband starts doing that to you, focus on his lips and understand that they're having a seizure.
Very good. That's terrific.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's actually really good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I do.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're putting that unhealthy, almost that abusive spewing. You're putting it back on them and say that's about them, where they're at, and what's coming out.
Bingo. Yes, exactly.
Yep.
And so, and also, there's a little neuro-linguistic programming involved. You know, when you turn the volume down, you know, you make it a video or a movie or something causing this disease, you turn the volume down.
Uh-huh.
Or you turn the lighting down. I mean, make it fade.
Right.
Gotcha.
But with the lips, if you're actually focusing on how he says those words, sometimes, and I've had wives burst into laughter.
Oh, so you're...
It's so funny the way the lips move. The guy's pissed off as hell, and he's yelling, but you're watching these lips move, and it's kind of funny.
That's very
okay, so yeah, you're saying watch the lips, an actual technique. Just do that.
I like it.
All right.
The lips.
Yep.
Don't look at his nose or his eyes. Or
yep.
Yeah. Certainly don't listen to what he's saying.
Yeah.
Hey.
That's great.
Frank, I enjoyed today. Thank you.
Me too.
Yeah.
Thanks
I really,
a lot, Frank. Yeah.